Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam.
And we're talking about perfectionism today.
Yeah. Someone reached out to you about this one.
Yeah. Yeah. So I talked about this in the mental health advice that changed our lives part one episode. And I talked about you can commit to making things better once you know better. Mm. And how that idea that I didn't have to be perfect, I just had to be open to feedback and willing to hear hard things and committing to showing up differently totally changed my life and helped me break out of perfectionism. And mm-hmm. someone was wondering if we could do a whole podcast episode about perfectionism.
I mean, really, there could probably be an entire podcast.
That's true.
I'm like, man, how trying to be perfect trips up your whole life.
Yep.
Because it does. And I think the way I remember when you brought that up when we recorded the podcast the first time, I really related to that because I think I had always tried to convince myself I wasn't a perfectionist because once I started doing things, I was able to deal with messiness or mm-hmm. uncertainty or any of those sorts of things. But what I noticed was I take a while to get started.
Mm.
And what I realized is I was trying to like – perfect the process before just taking action.
Yeah.
So for me, I recognized that trying to make sure I did it right.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't even get to the actual like attempting to do it because yeah. I was stopping myself before I could even get there because I would kind of be like, well, what about this? And what about that? And what about mm-hmm. this? Which I think, well, I think you just threw out the title of that actually before we got on. What was it?
Yes, procrastination
yes.
can be masked as perfectionism.
Yeah.
Because you're just procrastinating starting
yes.
when really you're afraid. Yeah. But you're telling yourself, right? Like, yeah. I just have to get it right. That's why I haven't started
yes.
working on this paper.
Yeah.
You know, working yeah. on this email, whatever it is. Starting yeah. a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Even like about 2 years ago when I decided I even was – kind of sure I wanted to move. Mm-hmm. A lot of what tripped me up was kind of this like, I don't know where to go. What do I do? What do I do?
Yeah.
Instead of just like choosing something mm. and deciding to just commit to it in its imperfection.
Yeah.
That was a big lesson for me that I realized I definitely was hurting my own feelings in some ways by the barriers that I was erecting.
Yeah.
Because it was so intimidating and daunting and new. And I was like, well, maybe if I do everything to get it right on the back end, mm. I can mitigate some of that discomfort or pain yeah. or uncertainty, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Well, it's so sneaky because I think what's really hard also is that sometimes we don't even know what we need to do next yeah. until we take that first step.
Right.
But when you're trying to be perfect, you have anxiety, right? You're mm-hmm. trying to map out all of your steps.
Mm-hmm.
But it's impossible to do because some things you don't know what you don't know until you start taking action. Like if you're going to start a business, for example,
right.
you don't know all the things that you're going to have to do that are going to come up
right.
until you actually start. And then you see what the things are that you need to deal with. But that is anxiety provoking because it's not all planned out.
No. It's like taking – it's this commitment to – and I say this in my content a lot as yeah. well, this idea of committing to imperfect action.
Yeah, yeah.
And – but there's also like a decisiveness that you have to develop. And that's intimidating because then – I think if we're talking about perfectionism in view of like making decisions,
yeah,
right? You get tripped up on which one's right, which mm-hmm. one's wrong, which one's like the best, which one's yeah. the worst. And, you know, like this more black and white view
yeah.
of the decision. Yeah. And the perfectionism is tripped up in that because you are assuming and telling yourself that there is only one option that could ever work.
Yeah.
When in reality, there's a million different ways that you could go about whatever it is that you want to do.
Yeah.
Now, maybe sometimes like there's certain decisions, right? Like if you're contemplating like a breakup or a divorce, mm-hmm. right? Like those are very concrete. Like,
yes, yes.
This is either staying or being done mm-hmm. or leaving a job. But once you make the decision, how you mm-hmm. respond to the decision
yeah.
has a million different iterations.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of times too, when people are struggling with perfectionism, I think what's scary when someone is a perfectionist and they're trying to not become a perfectionist mm-hmm. is it kind of feels like the entire structure of your life is in free fall.
Hmm.
It's like the ground you're standing on is perfectionism. And then there's a lot of fear because it's like, who am I without perfectionism? And what is my life going to be about? I think a lot of people have fear that if I stop being perfect, I will just do the exact 100% opposite, right? I will do nothing. And they're like, without my perfectionism, without me beating the drum of needing to be perfect and being rigid with myself, I will accomplish nothing. So it's very scary. And I think that keeps people stuck too. It's almost like when we talk about you can hold yourself accountable without shaming yourself. We can get so addicted to shaming ourselves because we think if I don't shame myself, right, I'm letting myself off the hook. And then I'm going to just do whatever I want and I won't accomplish anything. So it's really important to keep the shame. When what they don't realize is when you are shaming yourself or beating yourself up, whatever you prefer, that isn't actually helping you in the long term. It right. short term motivates you, but our brains can only handle so much pain and being in that place of hating ourselves for so long before we have to act out in some way. Whether that's through, right, like rebelling through, you know, oversleeping, procrastinating, drinking, dieting,
right,
you know, binge eating, whatever mm-hmm. those things are, like avoidance, huge one, then we can only stay in that pain for so long until we, right, rebel by doing those things. And then we feel worse about it because we didn't uphold our very rigid standards. And then to save ourselves from being in that really low place, we have to set an even higher bar for ourselves as a way to promise that we will never end up in the cycle again. But that ridiculously high expectation actually sets you up to fail again even harder. So it is this horrible hole that you dig yourself into farther and farther. And I think about this very viscerally because this is exactly what happened in my addiction. I would say that I was going to be perfect with my food. I would say that I was never going to eat ice cream or dessert or whatever, which was completely unrealistic.
Right.
And then I would only be able to do it for a couple days. Mm-hmm. And then I would binge on it. And in my case, I was bulimic, so I would purge. And then I would feel so bad about myself. The only way I could make myself feel a little better was to be like, I'm never doing that ever again. This is the last time. This is the last time. Like the amount of conversations I would have with myself over this magical thinking that this would be the next last time. But it just felt worse and worse and worse, and I couldn't get out of it.
I have two thoughts yeah. in response. The first one being being raised in the Mormon church, they tell you like swearing is so bad.
Yeah.
Do not swear. You cannot swear. Even crap was like a bad word, right?
Yeah.
So I truly don't know where like I picked up the habit from. But I just remember – I have this very distinct memory of in third grade saying motherfucker. And it felt so authentic. Like just – I remember being a kid just being like, wow. Like,
yeah.
This feels right coming out of my mouth. Like shit. Like that. But then, like, I felt so horrible because, like, I was little enough that I was still, like, in primary, like, Sunday school at church. And they're like, we don't say bad words. So every single night I would pray and be like, Heavenly Father, please forgive me for swearing. I promise I won't do it tomorrow. And then every single day of my life I did that until I was, like, 20. And then I was like, what are you doing? Like, but I would, like, feel so guilty. Like every night, which I want everybody to know I have no trauma from that. I just find it absolutely hysterical now looking back. But that like perfectionism tendency runs so deep. And I think it has so many different starting points. Like for me, I think it absolutely was like the religion.
Oh, totally. I can't even imagine how tied in with goodness and,
yes,
you know, womanhood. Purity. And, yes.
Yeah, all of it. Anyway, so that was the silly anecdote that came up when you're like, yeah, I would binge and purge. And I'm like, yeah, I would ask forgiveness for saying fuck.
But it was also right in your case, it wasn't even internally motivated, yes, right?
No.
That's why you didn't want to change.
Yeah.
Just I didn't want to, I wanted to be skinny. Yes. I wanted to, you know, engage in an eating disorder more than I wanted to not. And I wasn't ready to give it up yet. And that is a big part of perfectionism too, is we internalize other people's expectations, rules, beliefs. Mm-hmm. Rather than being honest, right? Part of breaking free is being like, what actually matters? Yeah. And being realistic with yourself, for example, with perfectionism, that you don't have unlimited time. And how are you going to spend your time then, rather than pretending every day like you're going to work for, 14 hours a day or whatever your version is, and get up at 5 a.m. and work out and eat clean and do all of these things. Mm-hmm. Looking at your life honestly and being like, okay, if this is where I am right now, yeah, I'm not going to be able to just totally be different. We talked about this in the New Year's Day episode. Mm-hmm. That is why starting with small goals is helpful, because you can build on them even if it doesn't feel as good. Because when you feel so bad in the moment, it feels so good to make a sweeping declaration that you'll never do it again. Mm-hmm. But it's not realistic, and you're setting yourself up for failure.
And all – I think both of our examples, from like the really silly to the really extreme, is to sum it all up, the issue becomes when perfection is the only standard. Mm. When perfection is the only yardstick that you have to measure your functioning, you're absolutely correct. Going back to what you said earlier about that idea of like you're in free fall, it's because there is no real foundation.
Yeah. Because you don't know your values.
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah, you don't know your value system. You don't know exactly, as you said, like what you care about or what's important to you. Like, I guess I figured out at 8, I didn't care about what like came out of my mouth.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, have like still having that like reinforcing belief system given to me. But anyway, I could have, you know, a 10 episode series podcast about how I unpacked all that. But I think, yeah, like when that is the only yardstick that you have, you are going to be in big trouble, because you will never feel like enough.
Yes.
You will never, ever feel like you are enough, because just existing will start to feel like it is against what you believe in. Right? Like meaning, if you believe in this idea of like, I have to be perfect, it has to be done perfectly, it has to be done like this, it has to be like this. Yeah. Right? That's impossible. That is just factually impossible, because also what I think looks perfect is not going to be perfect to somebody else.
Yeah.
The picture or the song or the film or the book, like whatever it is that I'm like, that is perfection. Perfection has been achieved. Somebody else is going to look at that and go, what are you talking about?
And I think you bring up a good point, Sam, too, of a lot of perfectionism is like fear of what other people think, and trying to micromanage everyone. Like, it's very intertwined with people pleasing, because you're trying to, right? If we go back to that, let's say someone wrote a book or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to make the perfect book is this way of trying to make everyone like you and trying to never receive criticism, essentially.
So it's manipulative.
So we're going to do an episode on how people pleasing can be manipulative, in addition to also being a trauma response and a coping skill. Both can be true.
Stay tuned. Anyway, in the meantime, back to perfectionism. But with people pleasing and perfectionism, they are actually very different. And I think a lot of there are arguments to be made where their Venn diagrams overlap, but they are actually two very separate issues. I think the interesting thing that I find with my clients who I work with who struggle with perfectionism, yeah. or when I see that people are struggling with this idea of being perfect, a lot of it can be tied back to moments in their life mm-hmm. where they made a mistake, mm-hmm. they did something wrong, they fell short, they didn't do something as well as they quote unquote could have, mm-hmm. and someone made them feel like garbage for that.
Yeah.
And it was where they learned that the way they do things is directly indicative of the level of praise and acceptance and love that they will get from someone else.
Yeah.
And the variables that you input to that formula change yeah. and are different, meaning like the circumstances, the situations, mm-hmm. the reasoning, the background, the nuance to every situation, but the formula is still the same.
Yeah.
If at a vulnerable place in your life, you make some type of a mistake mm-hmm. and someone comes at you aggressively about that
yeah.
and causes you to feel insecure, feel uncomfortable, feel bad, mm-hmm. that is a moment where you will now start to internalize, well, I'm not allowed to make mistakes.
Yeah.
I have to do this perfectly.
Yeah.
And the only way I can secure my feelings of being enough mm-hmm. is to be perfect. Because mm-hmm. if it's perfect, I know there's no world where someone will question my worth, my ability, my talents, my strengths, my humanness.
Yeah.
I will be accepted fully if I can do this perfectly.
Yeah.
And that is what is so dangerous, is because mm-hmm. every single person wants to be loved.
Yeah.
That's like a base human instinct.
Yeah.
Is to feel and experience the love of someone else, the love and the care and the nurturing of someone else. And so if we now feel that we are not worth that, mm-hmm. that we are not worthy of that unless we are living up to this insane standard mm-hmm. that we've established for ourselves, we are in big, big trouble. Mm-hmm. Because now we've created an environment, as you said, where we are in free fall. Mm-hmm. Where there's nothing else we can grab onto to confirm our worthiness as a person, mm-hmm. except for all of these external motivators and mm-hmm. validators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think perfectionism and people pleasing are different, but I think a lot of times people use both. And I think they sort of trade one for the other in terms of like, I think that when perfectionism doesn't work, sometimes they try to people please. Mm. Or if people pleasing stops working, they try to be perfect. It's like their backup sort yeah. of is kind of how I'm trying to think about it in my head.
That's a really good way to put it.
Like if I make a mistake and I'm perfectionistic mm-hmm. and I fail at being perfect
yeah.
over and over again, I may then be like, okay, well, I can't – I'm, you know, a crappy person. I can't be perfect. But at least I'm going to try to avoid getting negative feedback.
Yeah, avoid disappointment.
Yeah.
The disappointment of other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an interesting way to think about it, because I think that's sort of what happened to me, because I was perfectionistic for a time. But then, you know, like when I was in my – active addiction and my eating disorder, like there was no part of me that was like, I'm gonna be perfect now. You know, I wasn't like yeah. I was just trying to survive, and I was trying to avoid people being mad at me for my mm-hmm. behavior, and I was trying to manipulate people into like being okay
with your addiction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like the things I was doing, like
right.
I was a terrible roommate. I would leave the door unlocked. I would leave the stove on. I would eat people's food. Like I would do a lot of stuff that was like not nice
yeah.
and not respectful. Right. Right. I think it's like interesting because you're not perfectionistic if you're trying to also like have baseline respectable behavior.
Yeah.
Right. Like I don't even think I had expectations of being perfect anymore. I just had unrealistic expectations that I was going to wake up one morning and be different. But my main motivator was I wanted people to like me, and I wanted to not be called out. So I was unbelievably yeah. defensive, and no one could have honest conversations with me because I couldn't tolerate being told anything negative about myself because I already felt so horrible. I was already in such a deep place of shame. It felt like I would die if I heard, like, if I would have accepted or been open to feedback, because to be open to feedback and to not be defensive is hard. You have to really, like, sit in a moment of being uncomfortable. You have to truly, to not be defensive, fully listen to what someone is saying without coming up with what you're going to say back. You have to truly be open to being wrong. And when you have such a fragile sense of self, I think it's incredibly difficult to be that open to people. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people have very fragile sense of self. And that's why they're very defensive.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up this defensiveness piece, because as much as we can demand perfection from ourselves, we can often start to demand perfection from other people.
Yeah.
And I think the defensiveness comes in when we feel that this very fleeting sense of worth that we have is being attacked.
Yeah.
The scarcity that that brings up in you is so overwhelming and flooding that you have that reactivity of either if someone is confronting you about something or trying to address something with you, you shut it down, you dismiss it, you deflect it, you turn it around on them, you make it their fault. Well, you shouldn't have done this and I wouldn't have done that. Or like, well, if you hadn't done that, I wouldn't have needed to do this, or blah, 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 blah. But then also, if you are trying to address a problem to someone else and you just come at it with the most like personal attacks and assaults in the book, that is the same type of defensiveness.
Yeah.
If you come at someone instead of just saying like, hey, like that really hurt my feelings. If you go, when you did that and that, like, I couldn't believe you, like, you're such a piece of shit, like, blah, 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 right? Like, neither strain of communication is meaningful or helpful, and nothing is happening of any worth or meaning in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's why I, when I talk about boundaries, I'm very passionate about talking about, like, slow starts to them. And you know, people sometimes are like, that's not a boundary, right? A boundary is no. A boundary is saying you're not allowed to do that. Where I really like to come from, how do we make it as easy as possible for someone to not be defensive? And a lot of times that's saying that you acknowledge that they have good intentions. It's like saying, hey, I know you really care about me, Mom. I know that that's why you're reaching out to me a lot. And at the same time, it's making it really hard for me to work when you're calling me all day. So please don't call me all day. I'll talk to you at the end of the day, whatever it is. Because if you just say, don't call me during the day, what do you think the mom's first response is going to be?
Right.
Well, I love you. I care about you. I just miss you. I just want to hear how you're doing. And it's like, yes, yes, got it. But yeah, if you acknowledge good intent, I find sometimes people are more receptive. But what do you think of that?
Love that. And I suggest that to my clients a lot as well. But I also think there is – the defensiveness slope is like so slippery because I think – and not slippery because like it's not a real thing.
Yeah.
Slippery because the second you lean into it, you will lose all traction, because if the other person leans into their defensiveness and then you get defensive and blah, 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 blah. And in relation to that with boundaries, to go into the boundary discussion defensive, which I think is what you were alluding to, right?
Like
if you go in prepped for a fight, you are more likely than not going to manifest a fight. If you go in with this level of like aggression and resentment, which maybe sometimes those feelings are valid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
However, to be able to allow those feelings to exist without feeling that you have to give into them in order to communicate what it is that you need.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like this idea that I can feel defensiveness coming to the surface and choose not to engage with it.
Yeah.
But also I think defensiveness on social media has now become this manifestation of strength. That if I'm able to have like the most smart ass comment or the hardest clapback or the most like aggressive take on what someone is saying, I'm actually like more intelligent.
Yes. Oh, that's such a good point that I wasn't thinking about, Sam.
Something else crazy that we need to discuss is the fact that Valentine's Day is upon us. I don't know when or how that happened, but I can imagine there are some of you listening to this that are like, I have no idea what to get this person, right? Whether you're single, you're in a relationship, or you're wanting to treat your kids to something, it is always the eternal question of what do I give them for the day of love? And I'm going to give you a suggestion. Might I suggest the Cozy Earth Bamboo Pajama Set? I have been living in these pajamas and I am obsessed. They are some of the most comfortable pajamas I have ever worn in my life. They are so breathable. And it's not just bamboo. It's made from the viscose from the bamboo. So it's just like this really unique material that lays on your body so beautifully. It's cooling. Now, if you are someone that sleeps hot like myself, this is an absolute game changer. And the other thing to keep in mind is their sheet set is made from the exact same material as the pajamas. I can confirm sleeping in the sheets and the pajamas is like sleeping on a cloud. It is the best sleep I have ever gotten in my life. Now, they have gifts for the women in your life, for the men in your life, the kids in your life. And if you are wanting to get sheets, everybody needs sheets. So here's the deal. Because I love you so much, if you go to cozyearth.com and use code NUANCE, that's NUANCE, you will get 40% off your entire order. 40% off your Valentine's gifts are taken care of, okay? Go to cozyearth.com, use code NUANCE for 40% off your entire order. And if you can tell them that NUANCE Needed sent you, I would very much appreciate that. Nothing says I love you like Cozy Earth comfort. Valentine's Day is taken care of. Can't wait to hear how these turn out.
If this conversation is making you think, I could actually really use a therapist, I have great news for you. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, offers therapy in the Philadelphia area and in 43 states across the country. This is also where Sam works. So if you're interested in working with Sam or with me, we sometimes take a limited number of clients every year and we would love to work with you. Or if we're not a fit, we have, like I said, licensed therapists across the country. Learn more at therapyforwomencenter.com.
I think defensiveness has become internalized as intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm so aware, I'm so angry, and I'm communicating that to you, and you need to take it because this was your problem in the first place for making me feel this way.
Yeah. 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 I think that's a really good point because I do think we're seeing, right, obviously impacts of how we show up on social media, showing up offline in our real life.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about that in the friendship and flakiness episode, you know. I think to tie back to what you were saying also about defensiveness being a slippery slope. Well, I think it almost in a way also kind of causes some, right, what about me-ism, which is a whole separate topic that we could and probably will do an episode on.
Yeah.
But, right, people are very defended and they say something that they know is a caveat. And it's why I struggle a lot of times on this podcast because I'm so tripped up by every caveat I could think of someone saying.
Right.
That it's paralyzing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's part of it as well is, you know, going out of your way to say, I mean, I love the example. There was an example on TikTok, if those of you don't know, of a woman who makes dense bean salads.
Yeah.
And there's like – this has become the whole – I forget. I think people call it like the What About Beans conversation on TikTok, but it's essentially talking about how she made – like she makes these bean salads and everyone – she's had a lot of people respond. She's gone viral. Like I'm sure you've heard of dense bean salads. It's like – I think her name is Violet. But a lot of people on her page will be like, what should I substitute – like what about, you know, what if I eat meat? What if I don't like beans? Like why give me a recipe without beans? And it's like – it's called a dense bean salad. Maybe the recipe just isn't for you. It's not always that everything needs to be tailored. We've lost the ability with algorithms sometimes to recognize that we can keep scrolling. If someone makes a recipe that isn't for you, that isn't an attack on you and your values, right? If you are vegan and someone shows a recipe of chicken, it doesn't mean that they're trying to attack you for being vegan or they're purposely excluding you. But I could go on a whole rant about that.
Yeah. Well, I think if we're going to look at this whole situation, which I am actively looking at dense bean salad right now. And wow. Okay. If you have TikTok, go to dense bean salad. Your world is going to be altered. Anyway, so I think to keep with this, if we're going to talk about it in like the lens of perfectionism.
Yeah. And well, expecting creators to be perfect.
Yes, expecting creators to be perfect and expecting everybody to know all of your needs without ever having known you.
Yes.
And there's such an arrogance there. And I can also understand that there's a lot of people who are feeling not seen because of their loneliness, because of their trauma, because of their current life situations.
Because of political events even now. Like, absolutely.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot to be upset about. Like, nothing that we're talking about here is saying, like, you don't get to feel defensive or you don't get to feel this frustration. Yet, I think to make this recognition that I actually think now the perfectionism is less internal and more external. Yeah. I think if anything, if we start to look at this from more of like a social perspective, because I think in the beginning here, we were kind of talking more about what like perfectionism like is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now I think if we apply it to the lens of where we're at socially, I think the bar is in hell for ourselves individually. Like, there's no standard, right? Like if we have a standard for myself, I'm expecting too much of myself. You couldn't expect that of me. Like I can't expect that of myself, blah, blah, blah. But then we have these crazy expectations for everybody else around us.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to know exactly what we need and how to fit that need perfectly. All of the content that I see has to be perfectly curated to me. And if it's not, it's that creator's fault.
Yeah.
I can't feel any discomfort or cognitive dissonance or any sort of critical thinking from anything that I consume. Because if I do, that means it's being unfair to me. Mm-hmm. And that is the problem. Like we're no longer, the perfectionism is no longer so much internal, which again, there are still people that struggle with perfectionism. Yet I think the manifestation of it now is a lot less personal and a lot more outward and focused on the people that we are interacting with and engaging with. And I think it goes for people that you see at work, in dating, in relationships, in our friendships. Mm-hmm. If it's not this perfectly curated thing, we start to see it as meaningless or too broken or too fractured to engage with.
I think there's just no nuance. No. I think there is still a lot of people who feel as though they're being perfection. Like as if you ask them, they would be like, I have extremely high expectations for myself. And that's why I have high expectations for other people. But I think we have no middle ground.
Right.
So it's all or nothing. Like they're either a perfect friend for me or I'm cutting them off and walking away. No is a complete sentence.
Right.
Right. Or like, I am going above and beyond and doing everything and I'm not being recognized quickly enough. So screw it. I'm not doing that anymore. And I think it is these extremes that are fueling this in addition to what you're saying. And yeah, I think it's so interesting to watch all of that happen essentially.
Yeah, I think it's just something that I notice like in the comments and the way people interact. And like, I think trolls are like its own subcategory.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, I think we're not talking about the average troll.
Yeah. The average troll that literally has a burner account for the sole purpose of going around and literally trolling accounts. No. I'm talking about people engaging truly in the comments and like almost this belief that they're advocating.
Yes.
Right? When in reality, they're just nitpicking.
Yes. Right. I'm also thinking about the Fundal attribution error, also known as self-serving bias, which the classic example is like when you drive your car, right, and someone honks at you, you're like, I didn't mean to drift into your lane. Be nice to me. Stop being mean to me. Mm. But when you see someone drift in your lane, you honk and you're like, screw you. You're an asshole.
Yeah.
Right? Like we, and that is a human psychological thing. Mm. I just think it's gotten worse because we're way less connected in real life.
Yes.
And we're much more polarized and it is much harder, right? Like being online is kind of like driving a car in that way that you don't really know what's going on with that person at all. Right. All you see is the behavior
in front
of you. Yeah. And I think, as we said, I think a lot of people were mistreated, are mistreated, and don't feel validated, seen, heard, supported, have the resources they need, and it becomes something that we take out on people that we see just strangers. Like who are driving in front of us. Yeah, strangers, instead of maybe having some of those harder conversations with people in our life, or maybe also trying to develop more conversations, advocate for yourself in your real life. It's easier to yell at someone on social media.
Where there will be no consequences.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because like you can yell at a stranger and can say to yourself like, well, I'm never going to see you again. So it's fine.
Yeah.
When I think that is also an example of how we are losing this idea of respect and what is owed to people. Right? Mm-hmm. Like we're losing this. I don't have to be rude just because I feel I could be.
Yeah. I think that is a very, very good – we've lost – just like – just because you don't have to say please and thank you doesn't mean there's not value in it.
Yeah. I think something I kind of want to veer into is I think there's going to be some people that could listen to this and be like, well, what standards are we supposed to have then?
Yeah.
And I think – as we're talking about this and like identifying these issues, these very real issues that I think impact everybody, I think there's any single person who has any form of an online presence can probably say they've seen some of these interactions or have struggled with perfectionism themselves or have demanded perfection from other people, right? Like this is something that is fairly universal, but we just don't talk about it because it's uncomfortable. Yeah. The problem is not having standards. The whole point of living and learning how to live is developing a value system and developing a set of standards that you want to live by. That in and of itself is not the problem. That's actually a very healthy sense of self to develop. The issue becomes when there is no wiggle room for the application of those values. Mm. Where there is no world where it could be applied differently in certain situations. Or maybe the bar is lowered a little bit depending on where we're at in life and what's going on, right? It's this perfectionism is this drive that the standards that I have to be applied perfectly in every situation, every single time, or it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Or it's not
all
enough.
Or nothing. Yeah.
It's all or nothing.
Yeah.
When, okay, if your standard is being nice to people, if you care about being a kind person, and that is something you want to do your best to live by, great. There also might be times where you flip someone the bird in the car.
Yeah.
Right? There might be times where you snap at somebody or you say something you don't mean. What matters in those moments and where the standard comes into play is, and this is the shame-free option that I'm explaining as well, if you can look at that situation and say, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
right? That wasn't living in alignment with my values.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that and I recognize I can do better. And actually, can I share an online personal example that I had just like 2 days ago?
Yeah.
So I posted a video about, and I was like, it was the one where I was getting ready in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, and I was just kind of talking about how the current situation that we're in politically can be interpreted as your ex, the worst ex that you've ever had in your life, the worst version of them that you can conjure is winning.
Yeah.
And we have to figure out how to live while they're winning. Yeah. Right. And we're angry about it and all this stuff. So I, in this video, I'm like doing my makeup at the same time. Now in my DMs, I had a bunch of people that were like, stop talking about this. Like, don't talk about politics. I don't want you to talk about politics. Whatever.
Yeah.
And being very aggressive. So I would just like ignore them. There were a couple that I responded to, but for the most part, I moved on. But I was feeling that defensiveness.
Yes. Yeah.
I like felt really defensive and frustrated and a little bit triggered with like all of the stress going on with the situation. So I all of a sudden see this comment, and this lady is, she was saying, I don't get all of this activity. I preferred when you would just sit and talk.
Oh, I'm doing your makeup.
I didn't read that. I just read, I prefer when you sit and talk. So I comment back and I'm like, the arrogance of you saying I need to just sit and say what you want is astounding. And I was sitting here being like, I am so good. And I moved on and whatever. This other lady comments and goes, I feel really bad that defensiveness won out here, because as someone else who is neurodivergent, mm-hmm. I recognize that these getting ready videos are really hard to stay focused on.
Mm.
And I think what you were trying to say is you prefer when she's just sitting and talking to the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally read that and I went back and read the comment and I was like, you are such a dick.
Yeah.
And so I commented back and I said, you know what? You are right.
Yeah.
You are right. And I completely came at that with defensiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry. And I own that. And I went and deleted the previous comment. Mm-hmm. And I went back to the original commenter and I said, you know what? Thank you for your patience. I had a lot of people in my DMs and I really came at this with defensiveness and I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And I think, not saying like I did that perfectly, because I clearly didn't.
Yeah.
But it was really important to me that I rectify that.
Yeah.
When I realized that I was cruel to someone who was very kindly advocating for themselves. Mm-hmm.
Genuinely, right?
There wasn't, when I went back and reread it, I was like, there was no malice. And at the end, she even goes, I still love your posts. I'm like, but I think to say, like, it is possible for you to recover from mistakes.
Yes.
But you have to be willing to acknowledge that the mistake was made and have the vulnerability to admit, I did this. I didn't live in line with the values and the standards that I have for myself. So now I need to behave differently.
Yep.
And take ownership and accountability and do my best to move forward and do it a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was such a brilliant example, Sam. I think that that is exactly the power of knowing what your values are and saying, I won't be perfect,
mm-hmm.
right? But I will make it right if I mess up. Because if your value system is only being perfect online, you will fail at that.
Yeah.
And you won't survive.
No.
Just like on this podcast, like that's what kept coming up for me is we have been talking about spicier content lately. Mm-hmm. And like that triggers, like I get very anxious about that because I have all the caveats and the people, everything everyone has ever said to me online pops up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is a good like opportunity for us to just tell you all also that like we will mess up. We will probably say something at some point if we haven't already.
Yep.
That you think is wrong, that triggers you, that we're misunderstanding, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we said this in our first episode, that is why this podcast is called Nuance Needed.
Yep.
We have strong opinions loosely held.
Yeah.
We are open to feedback, co-created, obviously. And we believe in nuance. Like, that is the biggest value, mm-hmm. I think, that we have on this podcast. And that is the hard thing about nuance is mm-hmm. you have to stumble through this stuff sometimes to figure yep. out what the middle is. And we're passionate about not just teaching everyone how to do it, but modeling it
yes.
so that you can learn, just like you gave that beautiful example, Sam, of finding the nuance of that, the all or nothing of that mm-hmm. would have been standing your ground, mm-hmm. would have been like, screw you,
yep.
would have been not listening to that other person's comment. And I get it too. I've been yep. in those positions where I'm so flooded. Mm-hmm. It feels better to just block someone because yep. I'm like, I don't have the capacity to hold space for whether this person was asking a genuine comment or not. But to build a more nuanced world, we have to be willing to get messy and to hear other people's perspectives. It doesn't mean we don't regulate ourselves. Mm-hmm. But yes, I just talked so much, my throat's hurting. So you go.
Well, no, I'm just sitting over here like violently nodding because it really is the, like, this podcast was birthed from a place of us recognizing nobody was willing to have these discussions,
yeah,
or maybe even no one was willing to have, but they weren't even being entertained.
Yeah.
And I think too, something that I will sometimes feel daunted by with this podcast, I feel like we'll get off and I'm like, well, we didn't talk about this yes. and we didn't talk about that yes. and we didn't, like, we could have taken this angle. And so I think we're here because we hope whatever we're able to get to in these episodes, it allows you to think of something differently.
Yes.
Or you're able to understand something better, or that you see us kind of clunk through a conversation that maybe you were intimidated to have but wanted to have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what we're here to do, is model this as people who have the expertise, not only professionally, but as content creators. Like, for the last 5 years, we have mm-hmm. been in the trenches of living this stuff in the unique ecosystems that we have now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're not going to become like a political podcast. But we will be talking about things that are political.
Yeah.
And bringing in that nuance to that. And I think perfectionism was a big one. And honestly, I mean, we could keep talking for another 3 hours about it, but nobody wants to hear that. So
Unless you do, let us know.
Yeah, if you want long form, we'll go there. Don't tempt us with a good time. But yeah, I think just with this perfectionism, like, my final thought would be, it is a real thing. It is a mm-hmm. barrier. It is a thing that can cause you to trip up over yourself without even realizing that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. But also, it can impact the way you interact with people. Mm-hmm. And so if that's something that you feel you struggle with,
yeah,
just pause and take some time to decide, what really are my values?
Yes.
What really are the standards that I want to live by and hold myself to? And what does living those authentically look like?
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like when I make a mistake with one of those?
Mm-hmm.
How am I prepared to have some humility and some accountability and not let that humility and accountability become a stop sign for moving forward,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, how to just lean into it, lean into the messy of it, and then just try to do better, because, like, mm-hmm. that's all anybody wants.
Mm-hmm. And if this feels overwhelming and scary, also, I would challenge that it's because you haven't practiced it.
Yeah.
Like, it is very daunting and scary to figure out the words to say yeah. when we make mistakes. And before I had the words to say, I used to just, when I was so defensive, I didn't even, right? I would say, I'm sorry, but blah, 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 blah. And it's very hard when you're stuck in that to even figure out what to say.
Yeah.
And I think pausing is the most powerful tool mm-hmm. you have to sit in that discomfort, because defensiveness is very quick. It's very fast. It happens automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing to practice the words of is, like, I love saying I got it. I just think it encompasses like really hearing what someone's saying. Obviously, yeah. thing having on is don't do it passive aggressively. But really hearing it, being like, I hear you. I got how I came across that way. I hear yeah. how that impacted you. And I'm committed to do better. And this is how I'm going to show up
yeah.
differently. Or, I hear you, right? This wasn't in alignment with my values. I'll show up differently. Just like how you said to that person, I hear you, right? I'm sorry yeah. that I said it that way.
Yep.
Move forward. If you're very stuck in defensiveness, I would try to take out of your vocabulary giving an excuse.
Yeah. Yep.
Even if your excuse is valid,
yep.
it does weaken a little bit the mm-hmm. experience because it can become about you quickly. And that is a habit I think a lot of us fall into. It's something I used to really fall into.
Right.
And I would encourage you to hear someone, say you heard them, take accountability, and then be like, I'm going to do better moving forward. And it is more simple than I think we think it is. Instead of a lot of times apologies are about winning and who has a better yeah. reason of why they did that instead right. of just hearing someone and being like, okay. So if those words are hard for you, that is what I would practice. I hear you. I'll do better next time.
Excellent.
Well, we did have someone who was very upset who listened to our podcast and gave us a terrible review. So if you like our podcast.
That's a true story. That's not even a story. It would be
very
story.
Pleasing to us.
Yeah. We would really love it if this has felt meaningful to you in any way. If you could share your favorite episodes, let people know what you like about this. We're really proud of it.
Yeah. And we know this podcast is going to be harder to yeah. really get off the ground the way yeah. we want it to than others mm-hmm. because Nuance is really unpopular.
Yeah. Nobody
especially
likes
on social media.
Yeah.
So. But we are committed to it. And we hope if you're listening that you are too.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much.
Bye.